Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Nadia Cater.
Hello, hello.
Nadia, this is episode 299. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here to talk about this fun little movie.
So how did you hear about this movie, Night of the Comet?
It's weird because it seems to be having a moment right now. I had never heard of it. I think I heard the title, and I seem to remember being a kid and seeing a VHS with the zombie cop on it, which really is scary, but doesn't give you an idea of what the movie is. And I guess the first time I really heard about it was through In Search of Darkness, the documentary by friend of the show, David Weiner.
Yes, that's where I heard about it too.
It seemed like this cool little thing. And then I guess what made me think of us talking about it, though, was a couple weeks ago, the pollution in the air because of the Canadian wildfires was so bad one day on the East Coast in New York, where I was, that the whole world looked orange. It was orange outside. And my friend Danny from another podcast, the Lastercast, which is a great horror podcast, which I've been on a few times, he made some on Facebook or Instagram. He made some joke about it looking like Night of the Comet. And I was like, yeah, like, because Night of the Comet, I think one of the most distinctive things about it is its visual language. And it's a kind of end of the world movie. Whenever they're outside, it's like orange.
Right. And they use, and what I also think was kind of funny, and I don't know if you saw this, but a couple of weeks ago, Nighthawk Cinema in Brooklyn, New York, had a screening of Night of the Comet, but also a bunch of movies that had that aesthetic because of New York being so orange. And I was just like fascinated by that. I was like, wow, they put that together so fast.
Wow, I didn't see that. That's really cool.
Yeah, and they were showing clips from Night of the Comet.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Joe Blow did a video on their YouTube channel recently about it. And also, I forget who wrote it, but some website did a little article about how Joss Whedon has said that the younger sister from this movie inspired Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. I think for sure I can see it.
Right. Cheerleader at the end of the world.
Right, right.
Well, I was thinking of, like, if you're looking at the original Buffy movie from, like, 91, 92?
Yeah.
Something like that. That character is way more in line with the little sister at Night of the Comet than the Buffy series that became more fleshed out, and Buffy is more of a serious character.
Right. She's kind of like the cheerleader character in this movie is like, first of all, she's always wearing her cheerleader outfit, no matter what. Which is
even
funny.
Though it's like, the world.
Yeah. It's this funny like index towards I'm a teenager. Like it's like that and a Letterman jacket, or like I'm a teenager. and she's always chewing gum. She's making jokes, at the inappropriateness of everything. She's one of my favorite parts of the movie, I think.
Yeah, she definitely brings a good energy to it. And also the way the two sisters, so let's set up the movie, right? There's two sisters. One's a little older who works at the movie theater. Her name's Regina. And then there's the younger sister, who's the cheerleader. And did I write her name down? Yeah, I didn't write it down. But
I wrote
Sam.
down
Sam.
the Sam, yeah.
Okay, so Sam, so the two sisters,
They both have names, by the way, that are androgynous because she calls the sister Reg.
right.
Reg and Sam.
Reg and Sam, yeah. So two sisters who end up surviving this apocalyptic event, which is the comet that comes close to Earth, because they're both in different times in like steel buildings that somehow prevent the effects of the
Right.
comet. And everyone else, somehow, the way the comet affects people is that they turn them into like a red dust. So it's like somehow you're completely dehydrated to a point where you're not even a husk. It's just like a bunch of clothes on the ground with red dust in it, which
Yeah.
I thought was such so weird. And then there's another effect where some people who are only partially exposed and they basically become zombies.
You're right. But this
It's
is not a zombie movie. This is a movie that has zombies in it for sure, but is not a zombie movie.
right.
It's also a lot of things because it's a comedy, kinda too. It's as much a comedy as it is like a horror drama.
Yes, and I remember when you were texting me about this week. You're like, you feel like the movie tonally is all over the place, which I agree. It's like some parts are kind of like funny, but then it gets really dark, like really quickly.
I like
And
it though. I being all over the place, I think, is one of its charms.
right, because it's not. It is all over the place, but that's also not necessarily inconsistent because you see in like how the sisters react to their situations. Like Regina or Reggie is very kind of matter of fact about, okay, this is a problem. I'm gonna have to survive and deal with it.
Yeah.
Where Sam is at first in denial, but then she gets into kind of like she uses humor to offset her grief and her pain about it. And her grief and her pain come out later in these nightmares that she has about being attacked by like zombie cops that turn
That
out to be not even real characters in the movie.
right, which end up being on the like the VHS box.
Right. Which
Yeah, they do
it,
an amazing double. They do a double nightmare, which whenever it's done, it's always so sweet if you do it right. Like you think she's like we see her drinking, driving, and you think like she's run away from where they were. And I know we're all over the place, but that's okay. And then like she gets pulled over by a cop, and she's like, "Oh shit, there's a cop." And then it turns it's a zombie cop. And then she wakes up, and they were like kind of living in a radio station for a little while. And she wakes up, and she goes to the bathroom, and then the zombie cop is in the bathroom. It's like, ooh, a double nightmare.
yeah, they kind of lull you into a false sense of security because she even strips down to her little panties,
Yeah.
and like sheer bra, and you're like, wow, this is getting really, I guess she's gonna take like a what they used to call a whore's bath and just like kind of rinse off. But then the cop gets her. It takes you like by surprise. Like I was not expecting that.
The cop says something crazy too when he kills her, like referring back to because when we first meet Sam, she's having an argument with her stepmother. Oh, what does the cop say to her? He says something to her almost like it would be the words of the stepmother.
Oh, I didn't write it down, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's like I had to rewind it. Look how old I sound. I had to like review it back to see like
I think rewind still works here.
I guess, yeah. Oh, what did he say? He says something really interesting. Oh, this is he says, "This is for your stepmom, you little punk."
Yeah, that's what made me think it was like a grief or like a
Yeah.
guilt game.
Yeah, so we should say in the beginning like there's this like voiceover that's explaining like the comet comes every however long, and they imply that this is the comet that killed the dinosaurs. And then you it's weird because they treat it like it's New Year's Eve because you see people outside on comet night like ready to see the comet and partying. They have signs.
Like overexpensive, like comet, like stupid headsets or stuff like that.
Right, the movie theater she's at is like showing the comet on the th in the theater, and then the stepmom is having a whole big party in the house, And that's when the younger sister gets into a fight with her, where she says one of my favorite lines maybe in a movie ever at this point. The stepmom is cheating on the father with this neighbor, Chuck. And Samantha goes, "You were born with an asshole, Doris. You don't need Chuck." Incredible. And then the stepmother smacks her. And then she smacks her back. And then the stepmother punches her. And it's like, whoa. The tone of this is just, it went from fun slapping to like, this seems like domestic violence that I'm upset by.
Yeah. And I don't know if you noticed, but later, actually near the beginning, where Sam was talking to her sister, Regina, and she even says, you know, Daddy warned Dolores, or whatever her name is, right? Or Doris, it's Doris. Where Daddy even told, you know, Daddy's going to be so pissed because he's told Doris not to hit around my mouth. And our insurance doesn't cover dental, right? So it's like, wow. So that means that this woman has been, like, abusing them. And the father is just not around.
Yeah, the father is a weird character because we're told he's, like, a military man. And he's, like, I forget where they say he is, but he's off somewhere else in the world.
Nicaragua.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
They say he's like fighting Sandinistas or something. Yeah. So it makes me think he's like a Green Beret or something.
Yeah. But but there's an interesting thing where they say like their father raised them like boys, which is interesting too, because they've got the names that are sort of unisex.
Right.
And he teaches them guns. So both of these girls are like really good with guns and like know how to use guns.
Right. And then they say something about, well, when we got to teens or a certain age, it was obvious that we weren't boys. So Daddy just threw himself into work.
Right.
So
and their mother died.
Right. Their mother. No, actually, I remember this because I watched it the other day. The mother actually abandoned them.
Oh, wow.
They said she left and then Daddy married someone else. So I was like, wow. So these girls kind of like don't really have parental role models. And it kind of frame the movie frames the characters as two tough young women who really had to like, you know, take care of themselves and each other.
Right.
And I think that's so interesting because it does feel like a Buffy thing later on. That's kind of what happens with Buffy. Even though she has her mother for a while, she does have to take care of herself in other ways.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I it's a really fascinating movie. Because its reach sort of its grasp is not as far as its reach. I'm saying that phrase wrong. But basically, like the movie's trying things, and it's trying four things that I don't know it totally succeeds with, but that's okay. Because it ends up being super interesting and also like, you know, oddly sort of like disquieting. It reminds me of like, you know, some early Twilight Zone episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's that early Twilight Zone episode, like Where Is Everybody? Where like, it's just one guy walking around and there's no one around. And he's like, he starts like losing his mind. It's that, because it's like there's really nobody around. There's so few people in the movie.
Yeah, because even like the zombies, they're really like only a couple of them, and they're so spread thin. There's only very minor danger element, right? Because the zombie in itself is a weak character. Right. But yeah, the movie feels empty, and that's intentional because like, you know, everyone dies, they get turned into dust.
Yeah.
I was reading on. I'm sorry, I forget which. I was looking up some stuff for this movie, and I looked up that the budget was under $1 million. So they're trying to do some pretty ambitious things for like a $1 million movie. I think it doesn't quite, you know, they don't quite reach, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that this movie has a lot of interesting points to it. I also read that what they've done was they would film like in LA. At busy intersections, but like would stop people so that it was still a functioning city, like it wasn't a set. Mm. But it's kind of like how they did that zombie movie 24 days later, was it called? 28 days later, where they would just stop traffic and just film like in one section and then like move on.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. It's like they prevented people from going to this one area just to film it really quickly, looking empty and abandoned, and then
Right.
continued. And can you, I can't even imagine that in LA.
Right. No, I mean, seeing any city completely empty like that is always interesting.
There's and unnerving. Yeah.
Yeah. There, and there's some real interesting imagery in this. Like there's a, like I was saying before, it's, this is happening around Christmas time. But the way people are treating the Comet Night is like New Year's Eve, but it's around Christmas time because there are Christmas trees and stuff. And after everything happens, there's a point where this is when Reg is like going home to try to see if her family's alive. And she passes a car that's just stopped on a, at a, like a stoplight, like just in the middle of the street, and its doors are open and there's Christmas music coming out of the radio. So it's like, and she's on a motorcycle that she, I guess, stole from the guy she was, you know, having sex with. So she's like in this motorcycle, and then like it's this old car with like this Christmas music, and it's like this, you know, like just an empty car stopped at a stoplight, like, but no one in it. It's just a very, I don't know, gripping image.
It's very eerie, especially seeing nothing around and just the motorcycle, and then finding that one car, and you're hoping or thinking that maybe there'll be someone in it.
And the juxtaposition of like Christmas music, you know, which is like the most upbeat bullshit. We should say this movie has an incredible soundtrack.
Yeah, minor 80s hits that I didn't always recognize.
Well, but there's the one big hit, which is Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
And that, yes.
Which is when they're in the mall.
I think that's where most of their budget went.
So radio is a big, I guess, because they want it to be about teenagers, whatever. So teenagers like music or something, something. So like when the sisters first meet up and we find out that they both by happenstance spent the night in steel rooms, the little sister, after she got into a fight with the stepmother, like hung out in a shed. So she lived. And then Reg, working at the movie theater, she is having a relationship with the projectionist, and they spend the night in the projection room, which I think is super cool, because it's like you fall asleep and spend the night in a projection room, and then like your life becomes a movie. Like the next day her life is a movie.
Right. And an interesting tidbit too was like the guy she's sleeping with is the projectionist, and while she's in the room with him, he's on the phone basically illegally selling film stock so people can make bootlegs.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's like they almost depict it like he's a drug dealer, but he's a bootleg celluloid dealer.
Right, because he was like giving instructions to someone we never see on the phone, which was, you're going to come here tonight, take the film, and then bring it back first thing in the morning.
Right, which is so why they stay there.
Right. So it sets up a why they're in there. Otherwise, they'd be dead.
Right. Right.
And also.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry. I was just going to say, it also sets up a why the projectionist goes outside, because he thinks he's waiting for this guy to bring a film back.
Right.
And he's eaten by a zombie.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, I love that Reg is so, especially for 1984, she is so sex positive. She doesn't like this guy. She doesn't call him a boyfriend, but she likes having sex with him. So she has sex with him. And again, think about the way sex and female desire and female sexual pleasure are depicted in the 80s. You know, like she's not depicted as a quote unquote slut or anything like that. She's just, it's almost like the way men are written in the 80s. Like she just fucks and it's cool. And I love that.
It has a very 80s attitude about feminism in that way, which is, it is cool. It is a little outdated, but it's still cool. Whereas, like, well, I mean, it's kind of like that story about Alien, which was Ripley was written as a man, and then it's like Sigourney Weaver, right? And she has the most agency of any female lead that we see. It's kind of similar in this movie, where it feels like, I'm not saying this was the story, but it feels like they were writing for men to certain personality points and then added the feminine
character. It's that 80s femininity of depicting strong women as having male attributes.
Yes.
Straight male attributes. Like, we see her playing a video game, and she's good at the video game, and she, you know, she fucks for pleasure, and they both know how to shoot guns. You know, like, it, like, that's what makes them strong, according to this movie.
Right, because their dad raised them to be boys. Like, they literally use that language.
Right. 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 Although the scene where they have, like, machine guns and they're out on the street, like, firing at, like, an old car for practice is such a cool image. Especially the younger sister, because she's this pretty blonde cheerleader with, like, this big hair with, like, a machine gun. And just, like, that image is so fascinating.
I also love how blasé they are about it, because the cheerleader is like, Daddy would have got us Uzis.
Supposedly, the trivia is that the gun actually jammed, and the actress improvised that line.
That's interesting. That makes me think the
performances are very good in this movie.
I think so, too. It's pretty believable.
Yeah. What do you think about the radio station and everything with that, and the design of it?
Well, it looks like an 80s nightmare. Like, yeah. The purple and the dark and the giant, ridiculously long, wavy couch. Like, it really looks like that's where people, like, DJs will bring women to fuck around putting, like, playing music and doing cocaine. That's exactly what that place looks like. So it has that kind of weird, almost masculine energy.
Yeah, it's like, first of all, it's super dark. Well, they go there because they think they hear a DJ, so they're like, okay, there's an alive person. But they go and they find out it's just pre-recorded stuff. But like, it's dark. It's like totally dark. And they're like these weird long couches and like neon lights. And even like the bathroom is super weird looking.
Yeah, it feels like it was designed by cocaine. Like, it's just so bizarre.
For cocaine.
I don't know if you noticed, but when they realized it's a recording and they're going through records, one of the records they had was the Valley Girl soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which I think was intentional, because that movie came out, like, what, a year before that? And they're basically Valley Girls.
Right. Also interesting in that scene is Sam starts to, like, have fun and, like, play records and stuff. And she says, what was the original title of the movie? She says, what's the line? I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies on the hit line. And that was apparently the original name of the movie, Teenage Comet Zombies. But that's interesting. That ends that. So that plot point ends up being when she's talking on the air, we see like this science facility somewhere with all these like that's underground, and it looks like a maze. It looks like a rat maze. And even like their like little like logo that they wear on their shoulder looks like that maze. And they're like, they hear that these girls are alive, and they're like, we should go and get them.
Yeah, but there's something nefarious about it too.
Well, they do
No, continue. Sorry.
They do a really good switcheroo, because the way they depict it is they make it look like these are really kind-hearted scientists, and the one woman who's working with them, she's like a bitch and she doesn't want to save them. And that goes on for a while, and it's not until later on that they pull a switcheroo and you realize that the scientists are not good people. They just want to like find people who aren't infected and steal their blood. And in fact, the female scientist who was coolly depicted as like uncaring actually was a good guy.
Yeah.
Watching it a second time, knowing that turn coming, it's really interesting because you could see like the way that they're talking, how it totally fits, but just the way that she's acting and the way that they're talking and the things that aren't being said, it's so easy to like think like, oh, they're the good guy and she's the bad guy.
I don't know. I also felt like the way they were filmed, because even the beginning of the movie when they're doing that voiceover, you do see the scientists get into an elevator.
Yes, yes.
It's very brief.
Yeah.
It's really brief, but there was something about how dark it kind of looked. It made me like suspicious.
Yeah.
I was like, huh. Because they're really, it turns out that they are the real bad guys.
Yeah.
Because they're really a big overarching villain in this movie.
And they represent and this is such typical zombie stuff. They represent an institution. And in a way, they represent grown-ups, right? Like every institution is wrong, including the institution of adulthood.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. That's a good point.
We haven't talked about Hector yet.
So Hector,
Yeah.
is a character. We're not really quite sure of his age. He looks like he's in his 20s, perhaps. Played by Robert Beltran, who is most famous for playing Chakotay on Star Trek Voyager. Yeah, which I don't think he's done a lot else, but. When I first saw this movie, like a couple, I watched this movie a few years ago, and I was like, "Oh, it's Chakotay. He kind of doesn't have a lot of range." But the premise is he's a truck driver, that was in the back of his truck with this woman, and he even said just like some woman that he was gonna have sex with, and they were saved from the comet, but then later some zombies ate her. But what's interesting is, have you noticed, I think it's because of the budget, is like a lot of this movie there they is exposition. Like we never see Sam get into a shed, she tells us. We don't see anything that happens to Hector. He tells us what happens to him.
You know what's interesting? Hector, and I'm just putting this together now, Hector's backstory and his whole character is very similar to Ben, the African American character from Night of the Living Dead. Even
Oh.
in the idea that when you first meet him, the characters don't know whether to trust him or not.
That's interesting.
Because I believe Ben was a truck driver too.
Oh, I wonder if they took from that, because that was about 20 years before. Oh,
Yeah.
that's interesting.
Well,
The character, sorry. I was gonna say the characters don't trust him, and even Regina makes this weird joke about, because he has a gun, and she says something like, "Oh, this is what you carry in the barrio," or something, because
oh
he's like
yeah. Don't this movie was made in 1984. She also uses the F word at one point.
Right.
Not fuck. The other F word.
Right, the not great one. But yeah, you're right. It's like some things are just so 80s and you kind of forget
Problematic.
how things are.
Yeah.
And then you hear that kind of stuff. Yeah, but then eventually they develop a trust and a bond with him, and Regina becomes like romantically involved with Hector.
They both sisters kind of like him at first. And the younger sister's like kind of jealous of the older sister. And she's like, he's the last guy on earth, and you're going to take him from me.
Yeah, but it's even like, even in that case, I don't think it's so much as she's interested in him, so much as she wants a guy, right? And that's another point to what you said before, is like this movie's kind of sex positive in that way.
Yeah.
It's like the women are very upfront about their desire, like their sexual desire, and it doesn't punish them for it.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so, sorry, did you want to say anything else about Hector, though?
Well, he leaves at one point to go, like he's like, I gotta go and take a trip to see if my mother's alive. And that whole scene is weird because it should be played as scary, but they play it as funny. And I think it's the biggest misstep just plot-wise. I wish they would just cut the whole thing. Because he goes home and he hears Christmas music and he thinks, oh, my mom's alive, but she's not. And then like there's a knock on his door or the mother's door, and he opens the door, it's like a little zombie kid. And then he closes the door. And he's like, we don't want any. And then the zombie kid like breaks the door down and chases him. And I think it should be played as scary, but they play it more like Benny Hill.
Yeah, that was odd. But there is also, and that goes back to the weird tonal thing where there's something like so heart-wrenching about finally being able to go home, and he's like, he's even taking like some pictures to remember his family.
Yeah.
And then there's like that little kid, and he gets attacked by this like little zombie kid.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah. We haven't said yet. This movie is written and directed by Tom Eberhart. The cinematographer is Arthur Albert, who did Breaking Bad and a lot of ER. And it's
Oh.
really well photographed. The composer is a guy named David Campbell. And he's done a lot of work as an arranger, not a composer. But what I like about this music, it's very like 80s synthesizer, almost like a John Carpenter score.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because it has this sort of synthesizer kind of like feel to it. You know, you've got like the synthesizer music, and then like the neon lights of the radio station. There's a sort of 80s plasticness to everything.
Yes, and there is like these weird things about them being kind of valley girls, which is like superficial, but they're also the girls are the heroes.
Yeah.
There's a weird note in the movie where the scientists are looking for the sisters. They're not the radio station anymore. And they're like, well, where would teen girls go during the apocalypse? And they're like, oh, the mall. And the girls did go to the mall.
Right.
And like this whole area, and there's a mall over there. This whole area is, I wrote them. This whole area is a monument to consumerism.
Yeah. Like
it's such a weird kind of thing to put in this movie.
Yeah.
It also feels incredibly 80s.
Oh, yeah. The whole mall sequence is really interesting because it, of course, like brings to mind Dawn of the Dead, the original Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the whole movie. It's really just one sequence. And, you know, like in some way, it begins almost like an 80s getting, you know, makeover montage. Because like they're trying on all these clothes and stuff. And you hear girls just want to have fun and they're like dancing around and they put down their machine guns. And then we meet the weirdest antagonists in the film.
Which are like the zombie, they said they were stock boys, so they're like zombie stock boys, except they're more like an 80s biker gang.
Right, they're like, they're on their way to zombification, but not all the way there. It's very weird because they're trying to say something about capitalism, because they're like, you know, a few days ago we were stock boys, but now we own the whole mall. And it's like, so you went from normal people to marauders in 2 days? Like, and they had, like, because the one guy, Willie, he's clearly the leader and he tells the others what to do. And it's like, how did you very quickly turned into this thing.
Right.
And he has that crazy line. And the actor is so at 11. He's so overboard. The Reg says, like, you're insane. And he says, I'm not insane. I just don't give a fuck.
That's a great line, too.
It is a great line. It sounds like a joke, but really isn't. Because it's like, where's the joke in that? But he delivers it in such an insane way.
Absolutely. And they, like, try to fight the women. And there's a standoff at one point where they kidnap Sam, the sister. And Regina takes one of the stock boys hostage. And the leader just shoots his own guy. Like, he's just so unhinged.
Right. Like, that's what he says, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Right, but you also don't know what they were going to... Were they going to eat them? Were they going to rape them? Both? Like, you're not really sure?
They tie them up, and he goes, let's play a game called... what's he called the game? I wrote it down. Let's play a game called Scary Noises. And he puts one bullet in a revolver and he's basically like doing Russian roulette, like at Samantha's head. Like he keeps clicking the gun. And it's pretty fucking intense. That's the thing about this movie and its tone, which is it could go from lighthearted to crazy intense so quickly.
Yeah, it's like whiplash. Which then they're saved by the scientists who want to take them back to the lab.
So the scientists save the girls and then they split them up. Reg goes on a helicopter with the some guys. Actually, the two main scientist guys are like really, I don't remember their names, but they're like, if you ever watch TV or movies in the 70s and 80s, these are like really well-known character actors. Like you've seen these guys before.
Right. And I don't know.
I can't think of a single thing that I've seen them in, but I know I've seen them in a million things. So Samantha has like this rash, and So the scientists see her scratching, and they're like, oh, this girl is probably infected, so we should probably just kill her. So the female scientists, I forget her name, Audrey, the female scientist. I say female scientist because she's the only, I think the only female scientist you see. Well, you see some women
We see,
later working in the lab with the kids, but she's
right, but
the decision maker.
yeah, they don't have a lot of agency. They kind of just exist, those other women, just for like one scene,
Well,
really.
this thing, the closer they get to catastrophe, the more everything breaks down. Like as they get closer and closer to turning into zombies themselves, they don't give a shit about the women. They don't give a shit about kids. It's like as things get more tense, more of the sort of like rules of the social contract are broken.
Oh yeah. And they really quickly too.
Yeah. So Audrey and this other male scientist, they go back to the mall and they bring Samantha and they like lay her down on like a bed in like a department store. And they're like, oh, we're gonna give you this shot and it'll cure you. And she's like being very cute. She's like, so you guys are geniuses, right? We have some geniuses at my school. They're total wimps. And she's like, is that stuff gonna that stuff's gonna fix me, right? And she's like, yeah, it'll fix you. And then she gives it to her and then she falls asleep. And we think she has just died.
That was heartbreaking when
Yeah.
you like realize that that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah. 'Cause she's such a likable character too. And then Audrey and the male scientists like have a bit of a shoot off 'cause he's like, we got to go back. And she's like, you know what? I don't want to go back. 'Cause she's been against this the whole time. And then he's like, he goes to like look for his gun. And she's like, are you looking for your gun? And he's like, no, of course not. And then she pulls out a gun and shoots him. And then Hector comes back dressed as Santa Claus. Hector likes to dress up. And what do you think about this? He does it twice in the movie.
Yes. Well, he's definitely really campy.
Yeah.
Like he shows up just like Santa Claus to like surprise the girls when they're not there.
Yeah.
And then later right. And then he gets that kind of exposition from the female scientist with what's her name?
Oh,
Audrey, who basically puts herself into a stupor. She probably overdoses herself
yeah,
because
she
she knows.
definitely kills herself.
Which was also sad.
She says something funny though, which is amazing when you think about like if this movie's trying to say something about institutions. She's like, yeah, we're this think tank with geniuses, but we all got infected. They didn't close the vents. Like the stupidest reason they're all gonna die.
Which it is. It's like you really didn't think this through.
Right. But she left Hector a note that he reads after she dies. And I guess the note tells her like that Samantha is actually not dead. She's just knocked out. So he drives up to like the little think tank thing and dressed like a cowboy. He's got like a cowboy hat on and he's doing like a kind of cowboy accent and he's like, hey there, like he's playing this whole character.
Yeah, that I feel like they didn't do that enough in the movie. Like I feel like we kind of got in a weird middle. It's either should be none at all or Hector constantly dressing up.
I mean, I
And
guess doing the cowboy thing is kind of like he's playing it more white, probably because he feels like that will help him better infiltrate the scientists.
they call it a think tank, but they have guards, like armed guards
Right.
there. So it's like it's a facility, which they don't tell you what they were going to do before.
No, right. You don't know what they were originally doing.
Right, it's so strange. But yeah, he dressed up like a cowboy. He's wearing the tightest pants. I even wrote that down because you can see the outline of his penis in these pants.
What? I didn't see that. I gotta go back and look now.
It, yeah, I was like, whoa, okay.
Well, the
Which also,
movie treats him like he's the biggest hunk in the world.
I mean, he's cute. I'm just like, it's okay.
As Audrey's dying, she's like, oh yeah, she's right, you are cute. And she dies.
Which is, yeah. But I also think it's funny that, like, there's a kind of sense of urgency But Hector still made time to change in as a dress up like a cowboy
Right.
and show up in like a convertible.
Yeah. And he's got Samantha in the trunk, and he's like, "Look what I got in here." And he opens up the trunk, and you see her. And that's when we, the audience, learn that she's alive because she like pops up or whatever, and like I think grabs at the gun.
Yeah, that was fun. That
Reg has been in the so they we see Reg being like questioned, and like very clearly the scientists are bad guys. They're asking her all sorts of questions. They very coldly say, "Oh, your sister's dead," and Reg is like, "What?" They are. We learn what the and they, we also see. They saved at some point earlier two little kids, a little boy and a little girl. And we learn that what they're doing is they're basically like lobotomizing people, like turning them into vegetables, but keeping them alive so they could harvest them for blood.
Yeah, that was dark.
Real fucked up. And there's a really dark scene where you see like these two scientists or doctors, and they're talking about what they're gonna do to the kids. And they're like, and she one of them's like, "Oh, I love kids." And it's so dark in how like matter of fact they are about the fact they're gonna like basically vegetize these two children. It's so fucked up.
I think at one point, if I'm not mistaken, one of them argues, well, they're kids, they don't have a lot, right? Or like, how much can you get out of them? And you're just like, oh my goodness. Like, these scientists threw the social contract out of the window immediately.
Right. Oh, they're like, the little girl doesn't want to go, like, fall asleep. And she's like, "Oh, we're going to take you to the North Pole to see Santa Claus."
Oh, that was upsetting.
So Hector breaks in, they break out, everything sort of fucks up.
But you notice though that Hector does get them in, but he's waiting outside. The girls save themselves. He's not the hero. He's
Yes.
more like a sidekick.
Right. No, that's
Which
true.
again is another like 80s feminism thing. Because the girls have the shootout and they also, do they blow up the facility? I can't remember.
They don't blow up the facility, but Hector, I guess, puts gasoline in the car because he then eggs he when they're gonna run away, he eggs on the scientists and they get in the car and they explode.
Right, they start it and it blows up.
And
So,
one of the scientists is rapidly becoming a zombie. He's like zombifying super quick.
compared to everyone else, yeah,
Yeah.
that's why he wears sunglasses in a very dark facility.
Right. And they save the two little kids.
They save the two little kids, they drive away, and then there's like a cut in it, and there's like a title that says 3 months later or something. And they're just having the time of their life, just hanging out in LA, in abandoned LA,
Well, the
and
ending
taking
is so
family
weird.
pictures.
I want to know your take on the ending because the ending is weird, but I also personally kind of find it. I personally kind it, sorry. I personally find it kind of sad because, well, first of all, you see it rain and the rain like washes away everything. All of a sudden the sky's clear. Okay, fine. And
Sure.
then we see Hector and Reg dressed up, and then the little kids are dressed up, and they've become this nuclear family unit. And they're taking pictures like it's a holiday, or maybe it's like a wedding or whatever. And Samantha's across the street going to meet them. And Samantha looks at them and she goes, "Oh, they look like the Brady Bunch." And they won't cross against the light. Like they the whole little family stops and they won't cross the street. And Samantha's like, "What are you waiting for?" And Reg is like, "We don't cross against the light in this family." And Samantha's like, "What the fuck? There's nobody here. What are you talking about?" And then it's really weird. Reg says, "Well, the whole burden of civilization has fallen to us." And to me, what makes this sad is like, it's fine if they get together, that's fine. And it's good that they save the kids. But what makes zombie movies interesting is it's like the end, it's like, so sorry. So what makes the zombie movies interesting is that it breaks down the hierarchy of society. Like, going back to Night of the Living Dead. You know, like black people and white people get along and they have equal standing in this new world where the zombies have broken down everything. And the fact that Regina and Hector like take it upon themselves to like reestablish this hierarchy or patriarchy feels very sad to me in a way.
Yes. It's like they traded in teen rebellion for a nuclear family, security and stability. And that's boring.
It's boring, and it's like, but it's like, why? Like, I don't know. I guess the movie thinks it's a happy ending, but I agree with Samantha. Like, why you do look like the Brady Bunch? Like, why are you like playing house? Like, I get that it's the end of the world, whatever, and you need some normalcy, but it's just very, I don't know. I found it to be odd. And then, like, a car with, like, a handsome young guy pulls up, a convertible, and she likes him, and he likes her immediately, and he's like, hey, you want to go for a ride? And she's like, oh, you got a car? And he's like, I got 100 of them or whatever. And then she's like, sure, and she gets in, and the Hector's like, oh, we don't even know this guy. And then he tells them their name, his name. And she drives off, and I don't know if they're gonna, because then Samantha says, don't you know the burden of, don't you know the burden of civilization is on us? But it looks like more they're just gonna go fuck.
Yeah, that's kind of how they posit it. I feel like if we're looking at, we don't get a ton of personality from these two characters other than what's needed for the movie, right? But from the get-go, Regina is very, I have to take responsibility. I'm the oldest.
Right.
And I think that's kind of in line with her character. It is disappointing and sad, but I think it kind of makes sense where she's like, okay, I'm have to be the responsible one. And a part of that is being, I guess, in a monogamous relationship with Hector, as opposed to like at the beginning of the movie where she's just sleeping with some guy she only kind of likes. It kind of, it's like the movie is telling us one thing for most of it, and then at the end, it kind of like, oh, well, you know, you get your happy ending, you get your man, and you get your family.
Right.
And that's disappointing. But have you, I don't know if you noticed this, so at the beginning of the movie, Regina's playing an arcade game called Tempest. At her job, she spends a lot of time on this arcade machine, and she makes this comment about how someone beat one of her high scores. And the initials are DMK. And at the end of the movie, the guy says his whole name, and he has the same initials, DMK, and it's even on the back of the car.
So he's the guy. So what does that mean? Is that just a joke, or does that mean something?
I don't think it means anything. I really think it's just a joke, like a weird joke that's not really funny. But and she doesn't even realize it, because she's not thinking about arcade machines anymore. She's, you know, getting into motherhood.
Right. She's full, like, I'm a grown up now. I've settled down with Hector. We're raising these two children.
I mean, you could have fun with it. Like, yeah, I don't get why the movie needed to say that at the end. I feel like I'd rather be with Samantha, which is like shooting things and running around, having fun. But it also seems like they're not, it, and of course we only get this little snippet, so we have no idea what their lives are like, but it doesn't seem like they're very interested in finding other survivors.
But, you know, it does seem, to take back what I just said about they make it look good, maybe the movie is trying to criticize them, because the whole thing of them not crossing the light feels like really stupid. Like the movie is saying, like, look how dumb they are.
Oh, that's interesting.
Although then a car does speed by, so maybe not. I don't know. I'm kind of working through it.
But like, whatever that guy's name is, DMK, doesn't he almost hit Samantha? So it's like, it is like a warning. Because she's like, whatever, there's no one around. It's the end of the world. And then a car comes out of nowhere. And it's speeding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I don't know what it's trying to say, if it's trying to say anything at all. Or it was just trying to wrap up the movie in a nice little bow.
Yeah.
Which I think is most likely the case. It does kind of seem like it feels like it's one of those things where the movie's telling you it's a happy ending, but like internally you're like, this is kind of a bummer.
Right. Well, so overall, would you recommend this movie?
I would recommend it in a very specific context, which would be like weird 80s movies that are kind of almost pastiche, sometimes not. Like, there's this movie that I saw called Dead Heat, which is on Tubi right now for free.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept is it's a buddy cop movie, except one of them dies and becomes like a zombie. And so they're like buddy. Well, it's a cop movie, but one of them's like a zombie, and it feels very much in the same vein as this is very weird. Like, this is so odd. It's an odd little picture that tries to do ambitious things, but doesn't quite have the budget to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting in that regard. And I would, or watching The Stuff. Like, The
Yeah.
Stuff is another weird 80s movie. So, Reanimator. Like, I would say this kind of fits into that sort of, like, those different kinds of just small, weird movies. What about you?
First of all, I like that this movie's having this reevaluation. I think
with society too.
Yeah, society.
Sorry. I would watch this movie with society and Dead Heat, Videodrome, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. You were saying.
Well, I think when we think of 80s horror, we immediately think about the slasher franchises, Freddy, Jason, Hellraiser, things like that. But I think we forget things like this. And also, you know, this came out in 1984, which was a big year. You got Gremlins, you got Ghostbusters. Those movies both came out, by the way, on the same day.
Wow.
So, like, you could see how this movie could get lost in the shuffle. But I'm glad that people are finding it now, because it is a little gem. And speaking of little gems, did you catch LL Cool J in this?
Yes, there's a rumor that people don't know if it's him or not.
No, it's definitely him.
It looks exactly like him, yeah.
Because so they show footage of people outside during Comet Day, and it must have been like real footage from like a New Year's Eve thing, because you see people looking right at the camera, and it pans by, and you see a guy who looks exactly like him with a microphone, like, I guess, performing. It's got to be him.
Well, he's wearing his like signature look for the 80s and 90s, which was like a bucket hat, and it just looked exactly like him. And that was so odd, too, because he doesn't have any credits or anything.
No, he's just... I mean, if we didn't know who he was and he wasn't a recognizable celebrity, he wouldn't, like, even stick out. But you see it now, and you're like, holy shit, is this just LL Cool J? And it's, like, the first minute of the movie or something.
Yeah, blink and you'll miss it.
Yeah. We haven't said... I want to say the cast name before we finish the episode, because I think... the cast is just so good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look it up on the IMDb. Even the whole Night of the is like Night of the Living Dead.
Yes.
Catherine Mary Stewart played Regina. Also in the same year, she is in the movie Last Starfighter, which is also about video games. And Kelly Maroney plays Samantha Belmont. And she's great. What else did she do? Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Oh, right. She was in Fast Times as a cheerleader before this. Yeah, she's done a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of horror stuff, you know. I think she's like one of these people that like does the circuit of like conventions, which good for her.
I wonder how much I get paid for that. You know, Tony Todd is actually in Albuquerque right now. We have a horror festival that it's the first launch this weekend called the Morgue and Crypt Festival.
That's fun.
I know. I was looking up tickets. I was like, I missed my opportunity. I'm going to have to pay at the door tomorrow.
Oh, but 2 years later in 86, she's in Chopping Mall.
Oh.
Another right. 80s sort of horror movie that I think people are like I've never seen it, but it seems to be like something people talk about now.
Chopping Mall?
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen it. It was one of those movies on Shudder for the longest time, and I just never got around to watching it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, when I was looking up weird horror movies or weird 80s horror movies, there was a whole list of them, and a lot of them came up on Tubi. So it's like Tubi is the bargain bin, the bargain horror section of Blockbuster. Like, you can find the weirdest stuff that no one even thinks about anymore. And for some reason, it's there.
Yeah, Tubi. This was the first thing I watched on Tubi. I think I downloaded Tubi because I was looking for this movie and I found out it was there. By the way, going back to last week's episode, Tubi's starting a whole Godzilla channel.
What?
Yeah, it's just all Godzilla. Oh, I'm sorry, not Tubi, Pluto.
Oh, okay. Either
Pluto's
way,
old as a legend.
what's on Tubi is almost always on Pluto. Pluto is the free streaming service that aims to mimic cable.
Yeah.
So that's I like both of them for what they are, because I feel like the more popular streaming services like Hulu, Netflix, they're kind of slowly moving away from other content and moving into creating their own.
Right.
And you miss that opportunity for just the weirdness, the like the kind of B movies
Right.
that like who cares about these?
What I really like about Shudder and things like that is like we're finally getting like a library of titles that have been kind of lost. You know, some, like the jump from VHS to DVD. I feel like a lot of movies made that jump, but not every movie went from DVD to Blu-ray. So I feel like movies got lost there and now they're being found again.
Yeah, which for whatever licensing agreements or library agreements that happens behind closed doors, like they're getting a lot of these movies that people don't even think about anymore. Unless you're like us, who are like, hey, I remember seeing a VHS tape at Blockbuster 30 years ago. Now I wonder what it's about. It's just great. I really hope that these stick around for a while, because where else are you going to find this stuff?
Right.
Yeah, I'm like just pulling up random movies to find. Like,
Right.
where am I gonna find The Howling 2? Only on Tubi, okay?
I've never seen The Howling 2.
I haven't seen that either. I saw the first one. It's weird. It's very
The
weird.
first, I like the first one.
Yeah. Not the, I mean, I don't care enough to see The Howling 2, but I would watch it if someone else was like, I'm gonna watch this movie. Like, all
You ever
right.
seen Fright Night 2?
No.
That's another weird sequel because I like Fright Night, but then Fright Night 2 is like weirdly like erotic.
Oh.
Have you seen Fright Night 1?
I fell asleep during it.
Okay.
It was not quite for me, but I'm wondering if maybe if I watched it
It's
now, I
very
might
campy.
be able to.
It's not very scary. It's sort of a camp fun movie. Well, anyway, Nadia, thank you so much for being here and talking about Night of the Comet.
Thank you. It was fun.
You were born with an asshole. You don't need to listen to PCMC. PCMC comes out every week. This is episode 299. That means next week is episode 300. How very exciting for me and you, listener. Nadia, thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.